Wow. Well, it's come to my attention. Last time I was here, after it was over, I found out that I took about an hour longer than I was supposed to take. And so, I apologize for that, and I won't do that this time. Since last time I was here in January, I guess, I haven't left the country since then. I've pretty much just been working at JSMI. But the first thing I want to talk about is basically what I do at the offices, just because, you know, it's easy to just be like, well, I work for a missions organization. People are like, oh, yeah, that's cool. But, you know, what is there to do for a missions organization when you're not going anywhere? You know, when you're in the United States, what is being done? So whenever I first started, I did a little bit of work here and there that was just kind of, you know, obviously I did a lot of cleaning, stuff like that, because I was, you know, I'm the first year intern and all that. But I started to kind of get into media. They told me that, you know, your first year I probably wouldn't be involved that heavily into media and production and that kind of thing, just because you have to have a lot of trust in order to be a part of something, because everyone sees what goes out. But, you know, we were into season two production, you know, our TV show. We'd already finished season one. It was had already been released. We had the DVDs, you know, so the DVDs that were here on Sunday. And by the way, if anyone, like, missed the DVDs and still wanted to buy a DVD set, the offer still stands, just $20. If you'll give it to me, then I'll make sure one gets mailed to you. John took the DVDs because he had to preach somewhere in Tulsa later this week. But if you miss that opportunity, it's still going to be $20 instead of like the $25 or $35, whatever is on the website. If you give it to me, I'll make sure that it gets where it needs to go. But basically, I have a couple of jobs that I do at the ministry. One is we have an app, the Global Ventures TV app, which is it's just for the iPhone right now. But basically, you can see updates, you know, what episodes are coming out as the TV show goes along. You can see when new episodes are released. You can see updates on trips that we're going on. And we're going to try and have, like, live updates whenever we're out of the country on a trip. We're going to try and have, you know, night-to-night updates so that we can see how many people are being saved and healed, you know, kind of in real time. We're working on, that's a probably, not necessarily a definitely, I'm working on the developers on that. It's kind of come into my domain of working because our international coordinator guy is right now coordinating internationally. And so he's in Australia helping set up our November trip to Australia that I'll be going on. And so I'm the in-between between the developer and Global Ventures. And so right now I'm working on the design of the app, the content of the app. And so it should be finished by the end of May, and we'll have a whole new update. So if you don't have the Global Ventures app, it's on the App Store. All you got to do is type in Global Ventures, and you'll see it. It's got a logo on it. And so, you know, you can see trip costs, you know, trip details. As soon as we have the list of trips for 2014, that'll be up. You'll be able to see stats for previous trips, like how many people went on those trips, how many people were saved on the trips. Really useful stuff. You can see team leaders, people who are important on the TV show, kind of like a little profile thing, because they have become characters on the TV show, and sometimes they write funny things about them. But yeah, the app is one of the things. I work a little bit on video editing. There's a video about Kenya that I'm going to show in a little bit that I edited, kind of just put together myself to just kind of get people excited about Kenya. We have another one about Peru that I might show later in the year. I'll email to Ryan, see if he can show it later in the year when the three of us are about to go to Peru. You know, here and there, I've done some editing on the episodes that for season two, which you can see on the internet. And my name should be in the credits of like four episodes, so that's pretty cool, because the TV show is like international, so my name has been in cool places, but whatever. I do photo editing so that we have an archive of photos that look really good that we can use for newsletters or graphic emails or whatever we need to use them for. And every time we have a system, and I release photos on Instagram every time, four times a week, on Saturdays and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we release a photo on Instagram. It's just kind of a neat little thing to see, you know, if we're on a trip, we release photos of the trip so people can see what's going on, that kind of thing. I oversee that, make sure everything looks okay and nothing is just like, you know, a cheesy little phone picture or something like that. Everything looks like it's from professional ministry. And the most exciting thing I do is I write soundtracks for the TV show. Definitely my element. I just got a cool little toy, a little keyboard that I get to use to create soundtracks. That's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is just writing music, and a lot of it will be used for season 3, which we should start production next month on, which will be really hectic because we're also starting our trips next month. And so we're going to be running in and out of the country, and when we're in the country, we're going to be, you know, furiously working on getting all of our videos compiled and all of our stuff cut, and then we're going to be out of the country, and we're going to be filming and doing all that stuff. And so starting about the 6th of June, everything is going to get really crazy. But yeah, that's what I do in the United States while we're here. And honestly, what I'm going to do out of the country, I'm about to find out. I haven't completely found out what my main jobs are going to be out of the country because we took a trip to India in November, which was great, but it was kind of a short notice that we went to India. It was supposed to be to Nepal, and then it ended up being to India, and then it ended up being India and Nepal. And so, you know, I kind of had to leave a lot of the big stuff to the people who had been there for years and years, and I ended up being one of the normal team members, you know, that would just go on a trip that wasn't an intern per se, which is still obviously awesome because we got to minister to kids and to people, and we got to see people get healed and saved. But overseas, I'll be doing a lot of technical stuff. I'll be helping with, we bring these little sound boxes that are about this big. You know, we just take them with them, completely portable devices. They can get pretty loud, and we play some music, and we have our microphones so that we can preach to big crowds without having a lot of equipment. So on trips, I oversee those. During crusades, I will either oversee audio. I have like the big boom mic, or I'm a cameraman. Or I just help, you know, do whatever I can, help people up and off, you know, on and off stage, whatever needs doing. And then obviously other jobs, I'll find out what needs to happen as we go along. This summer is going to be exciting. We took a trip to Belize that I didn't get to go on. I believe it was in March. That was the only trip that I plan on missing. And I wish I had thought to get the stats for that trip, because there was a lot of salvations for that. It was a lot. I know in India there was almost 25,000 people that got saved and 77 people who were healed. And that was over like a week and a half was all that we were there. It was a short trip and that much happened. And so you can tell that India is definitely, Robin, you know, India is a very desperate country. It needs the light of the gospel, because there, it's really interesting because it's definitely a third world country, but there's a lot of stuff there and there's a lot of people there. There's so many people there. I think it's the second most populous country in the world, and it's quite a bit smaller than the United States. And so it's pretty intense, some of the smells that you smell there. But starting in June, I will be going to Kenya. Which is exciting. I've never been to Africa before, and I believe that'll make... I haven't been to Europe, and so after I go to Kenya, all I'll have to do is go to Europe, and I will have been to all the continents, except for Antarctica. That's... Someday I'll go preach the gospel in Antarctica. But Kenya, we've never gone to Kenya before, but obviously Kenya is one of the... It has the highest population of people with AIDS, which is really kind of an upsetting thing, because a lot of times, you know, there's nothing they can do and it's a very poor country as well. And so those two things create a really, really dark kind of atmosphere. There's a lot of witchcraft that comes from that, a lot of witch doctors and people who rely on incantations and spells and spirits that don't exist to try and help them. And obviously it doesn't work. And so the economic and spiritual situation in Kenya kind of has has a downward spiral. But there have been a lot of missionaries that go to Kenya, but they will do one of two things. They will either go and they'll bring water or food, which is great, but that's all they'll do. They'll just come and dump off some stuff and then they'll leave, and then they'll eat the water, they'll eat the food and drink the water, and then they'll be poor again. They do these humanitarian missions, but then after a couple weeks, it's over. Or they will do another thing where they will come in and they'll preach the gospel and they'll be like, Jesus loves you and stuff, and then they'll leave and they won't, give them anything. They won't, And to me, I don't know which one's better, honestly, because obviously all you need is the gospel. The gospel put you into position to where you can be blessed and you can get what you need. But they don't necessarily tell them that. They just preach, Jesus loves you, you don't have to go to hell, goodbye. And so we try to find kind of a happy medium between the two, to where we can come and give them what they need right now, so that, at least they're not hearing the gospel on an empty stomach. At the least they can at least focus on what we're preaching about, instead of focusing on the fact that they haven't had anything to drink for 3 weeks, or that's probably not the case for most people, but at least give them a reason to listen to us. They see these white people coming in. Why should they listen to us? A lot of times we have to bring something to show that we care about them, to show that we're not coming, to give them something because we want something in return. We just give them food or water, or we give them a church building, somewhere to go to seek shelter, like in Niger, Africa. There's a lot of Muslim extremists. There's a lot of riots that happen in Niger and Nigeria and places like Uganda. And people need refuge. They need a place to protect themselves. And we've gone and we've built churches in those places. We've built wells on church properties to where people can be given clean water, to where they can have shelter, where they can have protection, where they can have food. And they're not in danger of people stealing what they have or hurting them because they have something. Because that's a big thing. I remember one of my friends went to Kenya probably 3 or 4 years ago. And she said she had a piece of candy. She was walking down the streets of one of the little villages, and she had a piece of candy in her pocket. And the person that was with her knew that she had a piece of candy. And she was going to reach into her pocket and give the piece of candy to a little boy. And the girl that was with her took her hand and said, "Do not let them know you have that candy. Because if that piece of candy gets to any child, then the other kids will kill that. The other kids will kill that child because he has it." It's not even any real kind of sustenance. It's just a piece of candy. But they will beat the living daylights out of this kid because he has something that they don't have. And so they need something. They need something that can restore their minds. They need a place to go where they know that they're safe. And that's what these churches that we try to establish are. That's what these little safe havens are. We have pastors that we're connected with there that are creating environments that people can go to. And that's where we're going to kind of try and jump off of, is those environments. We're going to try and, use that to draw people in and to give them the gospel. Show them that, first of all, they don't have to go to hell when they die. Show them what reality is, the reality of sin and salvation, but also that they don't have to be sick and they don't have to be poor. And obviously that's the message that we try to bring to everyone. It's extremely important in places like this, in these really, really poor countries that, honestly, they've seen a lot of missionaries. They've seen Kenya is one of the more evangelized countries in Africa, but it's not one of the most reached countries in Africa. There's a large population of people who have heard from Christians, but there's also a large population of people in Kenya who don't trust Christians because, they've seen the people come. Same thing was the case in Guatemala a lot of the time. They had a lot of missionaries come in, but they didn't really care. They would go and they would, you know, they would come and they would see what was going on. They would, you know, maybe listen to the music. And if they had free food, they'd get some food or something like that, but then they would leave. And they never really saw anyone care for them. So that's really what we're going to try and kind of pound into them, is that we really do care for them. And we're going to have people that stay behind, not people from the United States, but people that we're connected to in Kenya that are going to stay in contact with the people that they reach, which is, you know, very difficult in Kenya, in places like Africa, because, you know, there are no street names, there are no addresses or anything like that. They just have to go by word of mouth. You know, they have to figure out where people live. It's kind of how it was in Cambodia a lot of the time. There was, you know, it's not like they lived on a certain street. They just lived in a house over here, you know, past the thing. And so that's going to be a really interesting thing that we do. They've had, Global Ventures has been to Africa, different countries in Africa, at least once a year. And so they have experience in this kind of thing. I've never been, so it'll be really cool to see kind of how things work, how the dynamic is between, obviously, people who are very white and people who are, you know, very dark, which I've never been in that situation before. I've been in situations kind of like that, because in Guatemala they're a little bit interested in people with white skin and, you know, blonde hair sometimes, but it's never been to this degree really. And I've heard that it's a pretty big culture shock. And so it'll be really interesting to see. But the second country I'll be going to is Thailand. I was in Thailand last year with Cooper, who's not here. But that was definitely... Thailand is probably one of my favorite countries in the world, because they're extremely open, which is surprising, because they have been taught that life is one way and everything is one way. And they've been taught that, you know, the way of Buddhism is the way of life. You know, they've been taught that these spirits will protect them and that these little charms will work. But deep down, most of the people there know it doesn't work. Honestly, most of the Buddhist world is searching for something. A couple of years ago, one of our teams went to a temple. It was a Buddhist temple. And basically, it was a weird thing. It was a giant statue of Buddha. And it wasn't like the big fat Buddha. It was like the actual Buddha that they show, like the statues that they have in India and Thailand and that kind of thing, the real pretty feminine-looking kind of Buddha. And it was a giant statue, and you walk in, and like you're inside this giant Buddha, and it has a long tunnel that you go through. And at the beginning, it shows how they believe the world began, and it shows, you know, how the gods created the earth, and, you know, maybe like a little story of one god got mad at the other. It shows like little conflicts and stuff like that of like ancient Asian mythology kind of thing. And you keep going, and then it tells a story about reincarnation and how, you know, when people die, they become something else, and it all depends on what they were when they were alive. And it talks about karma. It talks about what you do, you know, what you do determines what happens to you in the future and what happens in your next life. And, you know, they try to make everything look really pretty and really extravagant, and they try to make everything look very appealing and like, you know, all you have to do is live a good life and, you know, have peace with everyone and make sure you try your best to think the right thoughts and do the right things. And, you know, you go through this whole thing, and it's this very, you know, they try to make it very compelling and very interesting. And, you know, the whole time, you know, obviously none of them were buying it, because, you know, we know the truth, but we kind of wanted to see their perspective on things. And eventually you get to the very back, to where what it considers to be the end of all ends. And it was completely dark and they couldn't see anything. So what they did is they shined a flashlight, and what they had depicted on the walls of this little temple was very similar to what the Bible depicts as hell. And it showed the demons torturing people, and it showed, you know, horrible things happening to people who had lived life after life after life, and this was the end of all ends. And basically it said no one can, you know, infinitely attain what is, I think it's nirvana or whatever their state of enlightenment is, and eventually all people will burn, is what it said. And they put it in the dark because they acknowledge the fact that this belief that they follow ends in death. They acknowledge that, but they don't want to bring light to it. They don't want to really acknowledge it, but they know that that doesn't work. They know that what they believe is not the solution. They believe it is a temporary thing. They believe, you know, sometime in the next life, they will discover the truth. And enlightenment is supposed to be you discovering the truth of how you can, you know, be one with the universe, or all this, you know, all this stuff that's super vague already. And it's even more vague once you try to talk about what being enlightened is. But the end of all ends was darkness, and it was hell, basically. And we tried to talk to people about it, about like, what is this? And they say, oh, that's the end. And that's all they would say about it. They wouldn't talk about what they thought it was or how you can avoid it. We tried to ask them, well, how do you stop it? And they say, oh, you can't, it's the end. And because of that, they're searching for something. They want a way out, and they know there is a way out, but they don't know what it is. And so being Thai is synonymous with being Buddhist in their culture. You're not Buddhist because of how you think. You're Buddhist because of who you are and what you are. You're Buddhist because of where you grew up. And they don't want to acknowledge. A lot of times they don't believe that you can change your religion. And so a lot of times we tried to come in and tell them, you don't have to change your religion. You don't have to change your culture, your lifestyle. All you have to do is believe what I'm saying and accept it, and accept God and Jesus into your life. And, you know, honestly, when you get down to it, once they accept Jesus, once they have God and the Holy Spirit in their life, they'll get changed from the inside out. Once they start reading the Bible, once they start going to a Christian church, they'll figure it out. We don't have to try and, you know, knock the Buddhism out of them as soon as we meet them. You know, it has never worked in my experience, or in the experience of John Smithwick, if you come up to someone and say, hey, what you believe is wrong, this is right. That has never worked, to come up to someone and try to shove their religion out the window before you put yours in there. And so a lot of the time, we have to come at it that way, about how God is not something that is coming in to replace Buddhism. God is something completely different. God is entirely a different idea altogether. God is a salvation from something that is imminent and something that will come. And so it's really cool, because when you come at it that way, they accept it. And it's crazy because, I mean, I'm not saying everyone accepts it. Obviously, there are people who will not accept it. Otherwise, we will have, you know, we would already have millions and millions of people who had accepted the gospel, and I think we've had something like a couple hundred thousand, which is great. Over the last 10 years, a couple hundred thousand people. We've grown the population of Christian people in Thailand by almost a percent in 10 years, which is, you know, our groups that go into Thailand are never more than 30 or 40 people. And so just imagine how much we could get done if we had 100 or 200, 300 people going into Thailand all at once, you know, kind of scattering across the country. It would be, and that's kind of the goal eventually, is to get these countries and have hundreds of people go in there at once and kind of storm it. And, you know, it kind of compounds on top of itself. And people hear about this happening over here. And sometimes we have what's called a Starburst Crusade, which we're going to have in Peru. We're going to have 3 Starburst Crusades. And what that is we're having this crusade over here with John Smithwick, right? And he's preaching the gospel. And then in another town, probably half an hour away, we have another crusade happening at the exact same time with someone else. You know, maybe someday Randy Voigt. You know, another crusade that's being led and someone else is preaching the gospel. Another team of people are preaching the gospel. And then somewhere else, an hour away, someone else is preaching the gospel. And so these people are hearing about miracles that are happening in certain different places in the area, and it kind of grows, it kind of mushrooms a little bit, because people are hearing certain different things. It's not like, hey, I heard at this one time, at this one place, something happened and this guy got healed. It's like, I heard a story about this guy was over here and his leg grew back, and this guy had cancer, and then he went to the doctor and he didn't. And it's like, from people from different towns, people begin to accept it as reality instead of just like this rumor, word of mouth thing. And so if you do that 3 or 4 nights in a row, thousands of people show up. And that's what has happened the last couple of years when we've been into Peru. is we'll do these Starburst Crusades in the first night or so. There'll be 400 or 500 people to each crusade. And then after that, once people hear about it, there are thousands of people in each one. And that's why, you know, that's why we've already won over, like, I think it's 1.7 million people to Christ in the past 15 years. And, you know, it's crazy, but that's how it works, because people hear the truth and they know, you know, this isn't, they see miracles and they hear about miracles and they know that it's not just, you know, some rumor, and they know it's not just some preacher preaching some stuff, but they see differences, you know, they see results, which brings me to the third country I'll be going to, which is Peru. And that's what my dad and Ryan are going with me to Peru. We're going to do a little team thing. And that's going to be, that'll be interesting, because we've been to Peru lots of different times. And Peru is somewhat similar to Guatemala. They think they know about Christianity, but a lot of it is kind of a Catholic thing. It's a mix between Catholicism and like an ancient Mayan religion. It's a, I think Dad says it's like voodoo Catholicism. And so they mix, you know, the whole, the little rituals that they do in Catholic Church. I don't even know what they're called. I've never been to a Catholic church. But yeah, Mass, I don't know. Like the Hail Marys and all that kind of, they have like the little charms and stuff, but then they mix that with like idols and stuff, and they'll have like these creepy wooden idols and like voodoo looking stuff next to a statue of Jesus on a cross, which I don't really like statues of Jesus on the cross anyways, because, you know, I feel like that was like the middle of the story and we're at the end of the story now. Yeah. So I don't really like the Jesus. Yeah, he's not dead, so don't show me pictures of him while he's dead. They'll have this thing where they're like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, but then they'll go and like kill a chicken, you know, and sacrifice a goat to the gods so that they'll be protected from the evil spirits in the woods or something like that. And so it's a really interesting dynamic that I'm actually used to, because when we were in Guatemala, we had a lot of that stuff, like the San Simón, who was supposed to be this big, powerful idol that, you know, they would give him like liquor and they would smoke cigars in his presence. And it was just an excuse to get drunk and high anyways. But, you know, they made it up to be this huge deal. And we went in there and it ended up, San Simón was a mannequin with a cowboy hat on. He had like some Ray-Ban sunglasses or something. And there was like a little tube and you could like tilt his head back and pour like tequila down his little tube. And that was, then you got blessed from doing that. And you'd light some incense or something. And it was a stinking mannequin. That's all it was, literally. And we were expecting like this big spectacle, you know, because especially John, he's been in these big Thai temples and immaculate Indian, you know, like palaces and things like that. And he's like, oh man, they have, you know, brought this thing up to be really big. And, you know, it's probably going to be this giant golden statue and it's probably going to have guards and stuff. No, it's just a little room. One of the rooms in a certain house was just cleared out and it was this mannequin on like a wooden chair. And that's all it was. You can see on, if you have the DVD, you can see the Guatemala episode where they go in and they look at San Simón, and that's literally all it is. It's not even a good mannequin. It was like kind of a dirty mannequin too. But that's the kind of thing that's in Peru. It's just weird stuff, you know. Voodoo Catholicism. So people think that they know about Christianity, but it's not a personal thing. It's all about ritual, and it's all about this is what we do because we are Catholic, because we want to be good Catholics and that kind of thing. Just like, you know, a lot of times people who say they're Christian in Europe, you know, they're Roman Catholic or something like that, they could be Christian, but there's no way of telling whether or not their church believes in, you know, salvation through grace. You know, there's no way of telling whether or not they've invited Jesus into their heart, because I know a couple of Catholics who have gotten saved, but they call themselves Catholic because they grew up Catholic and they go to Catholic church and stuff like that. But, and that's kind of where we are, is bringing something that's a religion and really explaining who Jesus really is and why he loves you and why he came to save you. And you can't do works to save yourself. That's the biggest thing that I saw in Guatemala, and which what I hear is the same deal in Peru, is that works will not save you. And that was a big thing we had to press. We had to push that issue because they thought, well, it was the same thing as a lot of people here. You'd say, well, do you think you're going to heaven? And they say, well, yeah, I think so. You say, well, why do you think that? And they'd say, well, because I'm a pretty good person. And that's never the answer. And that's when you go into the whole way of the master thing. I don't know. But that's kind of where they are. They think that because they try to do good things, then they'll probably go to heaven, which, you know, honestly, that's pretty much every other religion's thing. They try to be a good person. As long as you try pretty hard, you're pretty good, but you never know for sure. That's the thing. They never know for sure. So that'll kind of be what we come up against in Peru. And, of course, we have to, obviously, we don't alter the gospel, but we alter our approach based on what people believe already. Like in Thailand, for example, you don't say Jesus is the king because you could get thrown out of Thailand. You know, you can get the gospel message across without saying Jesus is your king. You know, it's true, and that's what the Bible says, but it's easier to say Jesus loves you and he wants to be your father than to say Jesus wants to be your king, because in Thailand they have a king and everyone loves the king. And apparently, economically, he's the best king that they've ever had. And if you disgrace the king, then they will cut you off. And so, that kind of thing. You know, in Kenya, you don't talk about good works because they don't really try. You know, they don't have an issue with trying to be a good person. You know, everyone kind of has a community feeling. You know, there's much less, you know, stealing, a lot less violence. It's just poverty, and people just don't know the truth. And so you tell them how to make them clean on the inside. You tell them how to make sure that they can go to heaven. So how to make sure that their life can get better than it is right now. You know, in Guatemala, you make sure that they know doing good works isn't the point, because that's what they think. Sorry, not Guatemala, Peru. So that's what me and my brother and my dad will be doing. And then a couple months later, in November, we'll be taking a trip to a country that I've been wanting to go to since I was probably like 15 or 16. We're going to be going to Australia, which is a new thing because it's a first world country, and we have stuff that we've used in the United States. We've done some youth camps and things like that in like Indiana and Alabama and Canada. And they work for first world countries, but they work for this country. And so we're in the process of creating a curriculum for overseas, but for a first world setting. We're going to do some inner city missions in the city of Cairns, whatever you say. It's like Sydney is right here and Cairns is up here. So it's kind of up here. The majority of the time we're there, we're going to be doing that. Inner city stuff, talking to teenagers, because there's a lot of violence, a lot of like kind of not gangs, but gang type activity. There's a lot of drugs. Same thing with big cities in the United States, just kind of in Australia. So a lot of the time we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing presentations for teenagers, for kids, and for adults too. But we're trying really hard to press into teenagers while we're there. A lot of the time, our big push is kids. We have children's crusades. We go out to schools and to places like that. We try to get kids because once kids are there, you know, they're either set for life or they can go home and they can get their parents saved. It's a lot easier to convert a 5-year-old than it is to convert a 50-year-old who's believed something for such a long period of time that he's kind of a shell now. But his kids can kind of get under that shell. And so a lot of times we push for kids, but in Australia we're going to push for the teenagers because just like in America, the teenagers are kind of the ones that shape what people do. You know, you see on TV, you see on, you know, the internet, music, people basically shape the way that they present things in a way that's palatable for teenagers. And that's kind of how things work, is they try to get the teens into stuff because they know that the teens will go, you know, 100% into it. And that's, you know, teenagers will be shaped by culture. And in turn, teenagers will shape the culture of the future, which is, you know, teenagers are only teenagers for like 7 years. And so if they can get them hooked on a certain thing, then that's how the future will be. Like, I'm trying to think. Like social media, that wasn't a thing when I was a little kid. But then when I was a teenager, it became a thing. And now it's kind of set. You know, that's part of culture now. But it started with the teenagers. That's what it was geared towards, was teenagers. They had MySpace and then they had Facebook. And Facebook is the big thing now. But now, like, iPhones and Androids and all that stuff, it's all about Facebook. And it's all about how you can be connected socially with everybody. And that started with the teenagers because they all wanted to be connected to each other. And so that's kind of the push that we're kind of trying to go towards because, you know, being a first world country, they kind of have the same approach to their culture with teenagers. But part of the time, also while we're in Australia, we're going to do a separate thing with just staff and interns. I don't know if we're going to go, if we're going to stay there longer than the rest of them, or if we're just going to go on a separate trip while they do like their free day or something. But what we're going to do is we're going to go into the tribal villages out in, like, kind of the dangerous parts of Australia. We're going to preach to the Aborigine tribes, and the reason that it's just for staff and interns is because it's an extremely sensitive situation that's over there. It's kind of, it's not that comparable, but it's slightly kind of like the Civil War kind of thing. It's a very racial issue because the Aborigines were the people that were there before the British came and settled in Australia. And just like the British coming to America, fighting the Indians, that same thing happened in Australia with the Aborigines. They're very dark-skinned people. But, you know, there was never any kind of agreement formed. There was never any kind of closure. And, you know, there are tribes of Aborigines out there that, you know, they're still tribes. They want to stay in the past. They want to stay, and they don't want their culture to be messed with. And that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of how it was for a long time with the American Indians and that kind of thing. It's just a little bit set farther back. But there's grown a really deep hatred between the two kinds of people, especially in the city of Cairns. They do not like the Aborigine people, and the Aborigine people do not like white people. And we heard a story a couple months ago about a team of missionaries that went into Australia probably 10, 15 years ago into the Aborigine tribes. And they were a team of kind of like one of our teams. They went in, they tried to preach the gospel. They, you know, got everyone kind of gathered up. They, you know, had food or water or whatever they needed. And they started to preach the gospel. And this whole little village, you know, they totally went for it and they got saved. And they had like a feast and stuff like that. You know, they wanted to give them food and stuff. And so, you know, they went into the little building where they had the town hall or like the leader of the village or whatever was there. And they presented the team with these slices of chocolate cake, which was, you know, a huge gesture because they're poor. It took a lot for them to kind of scratch everything together to get enough money to buy a chocolate cake. And so the majority of the team was like, oh, great, chocolate cake. Let's eat some chocolate cake. But there's this one lady that she was on a diet, and she didn't want to eat that chocolate cake because it did not follow her diet. And so she said, no, thank you. And they got a little, you know, they kind of thought it was funny. They said, eat the chocolate cake. And she said, I'm on a diet. I don't want it. And they took the chocolate cake from the other team members, and they said, get out. And so the team obviously was a little bit freaked out by that. They got kicked out of the tribe, out of the village. They said, don't come back. We don't want your people. You know, this is why we don't trust white people, because they think we're poor and they think we're stupid and they don't take our gifts. And, you know, they're sensitive about that. And so they said, okay, I'm sorry. And so they went and they drove to another village that was probably about half an hour away. Before they got to that village, there were people lined up outside saying, we don't want you here, because they had already heard about these white people that were traveling around that were disgracing the Aborigines, and just because a lady didn't want to eat a slice of chocolate cake. And it took years before that area was able to receive anything from any white person. You know, it was just in the last year or two that one of our teams in Australia was able to go in there, like just get into the village without them getting violent about it. And so this is how sensitive these people are. And so we have to be very careful. It's just a small group that's going down in there. A really, you know, we have to be really careful about how we present things. And so it's just going to be staff and interns, but that'll be one of the things that we're going into. Probably won't get too much media from that. We probably won't get very many pictures and videos just because obviously they're a little bit cautious. We've run into problems like that before, especially in India. People don't want to be videoed. They don't want to feel like they're, you know, they don't want to be shown to the rest of the world. You know what I mean? And, you know, they're in Australia, so they understand. People are got big cameras in their face. That means that a bunch of other people are about to see what they're doing, you know. In Cambodia, they didn't always know what a camera was, you know. In Thailand, they liked cameras. They wanted to, you know, play with the cameras or whatever. But, you know, it's all just how the culture is. And so that'll be really interesting. So that'll be over Thanksgiving. I was in India and Nepal last Thanksgiving. This Thanksgiving, I'll be in Australia. But the big thing is the reason that I'm doing it, the reason that I'm able to do it, however, is because of support. And I am amazed that the amount of support that I get comes from pretty much this group of people right here. Honestly, I think there's one or two people who are not here that support me, but pretty much all my support comes from the people who are in this building right now. And that's a lot. I've gotten something, I don't even count how much money has come in from Life Church alone. But it's a lot, and it's paid for me to do the internship, which is $1,500, to go to India, to pay off Thailand and Kenya, and we're about to pay for the tickets for Peru. Peru's not completely paid off yet. I still need about $1,100 by June 1st to get to Peru, which will be pretty intense for me to, but, you know, it's God's will, it's God's bill. So first of all, once again, I say this every time, but thank you so much for supporting me, for being faithful. A lot of times, I hear a lot of stories from the other interns and staff members at JSMI that they'll go at it and they'll start the internship thing and they'll have people pouring in money. And then 2 or 3 months down the road, people just kind of get bored and they kind of stop giving money and they're like, well, they probably haven't, you know, and they stop. And they may commit, they may not commit, but they don't really finish. They don't really follow through. But so far, it's been a steady flow that I've gotten. It hasn't dwindled. If anything, I feel like I've actually gotten more money the last couple months coming in for these trips than I did near the beginning, which is crazy. And people are, you know, the financial department at Global Ventures is like, you have this much coming in, and I don't understand where it's all coming from because the check is coming from Life Church. And it's not like I'm getting a little bit here and a little bit there. It's all coming from, it's all funneling through Life Church. And so, you know, it's crazy to see that I'm able to go to 4 trips this year, plus a 5th one that was last year, you know, just with one single swoop. You know what I mean? Just going into it, and it's all paid for in advance too. Like the India trip, I paid for it all at once. The Thailand trip, I was pretty much paid like 3 or 4 months ago. The Kenya trip, I finished paying last month. The Peru trip, I'm going to finish paying hopefully the end of this month. The Australia trip, I posted a little campaign on the internet on a little fundraising website, and I've already raised $120 for it. Just, you know, it was just put out there. I didn't even advertise that much for it. And I said this last time, and I'm going to go over these numbers again just because I'm so incredibly proud. Since Life Church and the people at Life Church, you know, the Vincents, Michael and Mary, my parents, my family, everyone else who's gave through the offering, which I don't even know how many people have given just one-time offerings or anything like that. Since we've begun kind of this partnership back before I went to Guatemala, I have seen 670 people healed instantly and noticeably. And I've seen over 82,000 people come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. And it's not all because of me, because anyone can just go and, you know, I get tired really easily. I'm not, you know, I'm a skinny guy. I have to eat a lot of food. It's not like I'm the most well-equipped for this kind of job physically or, you know, emotionally. I cry sometimes. And so, you know, I'm not the toughest guy in the world. So it's not because it's something that I decided to do. Anyone could decide to do this job. But it's the fact that I have a backbone, and that is you guys. And it's a small core group of people that have given and they've sown into it. And I know that every step that I take, every word that I say to the people who have never heard the gospel before, everything that I see and everything that I do, I know you guys are right next to me as I'm doing it. And I know that every single soul that's saved is accredited to you as well. I know that you're going to, you know, we talk about rewards in heaven, and that's not just for me. You know, it's for everyone that's been a partner. And I know that we're going to share in the reward. And honestly, I think we're kind of sharing in the reward right now. You know, I feel like, I mean, obviously to me, I'm seeing a lot of these things. And so it's already rewarded me just knowing that this kind of stuff happens and knowing that there is a group of people out there that's making a change and that I get to be a part of it, and that so do you guys. And I know it's crazy for me to think that Life Church, one of the few Spirit-filled churches in Lubbock, and probably one of the smaller Spirit-filled churches in Lubbock, is pouring out this much time and effort and energy to seeking and saving the lost. And I've been listening to the podcasts the last couple of weeks, and it's been crazy because you've been talking about outreach, you know, throughout, you know, just this area. And you've been talking about your new plan for kids. We have the maps up in the prayer room. Is that the prayer room where the maps are up? Well, there's a room over somewhere over there with maps of the city. And there's, you know, lines drawn where we're going and praying. And there's going to be a meeting tonight, right, about the Memorial Day outreach. And so all this stuff is coming from this one central location. And it's crazy for me to see that there are huge churches that don't do anything. There are giant churches. We had an offer. We have little packages of kind of B-roll that we've shot in other countries, you know, just really pretty video shots and stuff like that, that we kind of have up for sale because we know we'll never use them and stuff like that. There was a church in town, a certain denominational church in Tulsa, that wanted to buy just kind of a group of extra video clips that we had. And, you know, we're thinking, these are really good video clips. And we think, you know, a couple thousand dollars would suffice, right? And they offered us $500. And we looked up what their monthly income was. And it's over $2 million a month is what they get from, you know, tithes, offerings, from the association that the church belongs to, all this politics stuff. And obviously we said no. We said, we don't want you. But it's crazy because we also looked up the missions output for this church and how much they're spending on outreach, how much what they're doing to reach people, even just in Tulsa, and it was nothing. All their money was going to their building, it was going to their, you know, the concerts that they host, the, you know, the little programs that they have within the church. They're, you know, using it to pay the staff members and pastors that are there. $2 million a month. And it's not going anywhere. It's staying right there. And so to see that this place has already pushed out thousands and thousands of dollars in like a year. And this church, you know, I've probably seen at most like 70 people in this room before. And, you know, to think about these other churches that have thousands of people, and the output is zero. It amazes me to see what is possible, you know. And I don't mean to say that to discourage you or to make you think that I'm angry at other churches, even though it is somewhat discouraging and somewhat frustrating, because there are other churches that are huge that are also putting out tons and tons of money to save people. The church that I serve in while I'm in Tulsa, Church on the Move, they put out hundreds of thousands of dollars a week for outreach, for missions. I believe they actually support JSMI, and so they give us money to do what we do as well. And so, once again, thank you guys for doing what y'all have done, for supporting me through since 2011, I believe, since I first started. I've made a commitment to JSMI to stay for another year from the beginning of September till the end of August of 2014. And so I want you to go ahead and begin thinking. A lot of y'all have made a year-long commitment, so I want y'all to begin thinking about kind of so that there's not a drop in it, you know, so that there's not, you know, a place where you have to, like, resume or you have to kind of pick back up support. I want to go ahead and ask you to consider supporting me again, making another commitment for another year, because obviously great things have happened this year. Great things are going to happen as we continue. And so for the next year, I'll need about the same amount of money. I think it was something around $12,000 for the year. I'll let y'all know, like, the deadlines for stuff and things like that. I assumed that I needed just, like, a certain amount of money for the year, but there are more deadlines that I had to follow, and so I found myself in an interesting situation, and that's why I need $1,100 by the end of this month. Great things have happened this year. I'm going to continue through the next year. Pray about continuing support for next year, because equally amazing things are going to happen through that, and I'm going to be getting more involved with the ministry, and I'm going to have more things that I'm going to be able to do. Last thing that I want to do is I want to show you a video that I put together about my upcoming trip to Kenya, which is the first of that sequence of trips that I told you about. And my friend Peter Ratcliffe, the guy who he's my international coordination supervisor, he went to Kenya a little while ago, and he got me some footage, and so I put this video together.
Global Ventures will be coming in and bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ in June.
My name is Pastor Peter Mutui with the New Life Christian Center Kenya, and I want to say welcome Global Ventures here in Kenya.
It is a beautiful place. We're in Wingi, which is about 3 hours outside of Nairobi, the capital city, and we're surrounded by beautiful hills and mountains here, and this place is just awesome. You're going to love it. The people are really friendly. They don't see many white faces, so they're going to be just captivated by our teams, and they're going to receive the gospel. We're expecting thousands and thousands of salvations, and we're going to be ministering not just in the city area here, but also in the outlying village area. So it's going to just be an epic journey. Get ready, guys. Get all your money in. Get all your friends to join in the team, in the trip if they can, and we'll see you in June here in Kenya.
Welcome to Kenya. So that's Kenya. Starts in a little less than a month. That'll kick off all the craziness, because that's about the time when production on season 3 will start. And I'll make sure that I have updates on Facebook and Twitter, and I'll try to mail out some stuff when I get the chance, you know, in between trips. Make sure that you guys are well updated. If you don't, if you're not, I'm pretty sure everyone is on Facebook. If you're on Facebook and you're not my friend, probably friend me, because I put a lot of updates on that. If you have an iPhone and you have Instagram, follow me on Instagram, because I always post lots of pictures and stuff that about stuff that's happening. I try to take pictures whenever healings are happening, and so I have a lot of pictures like that on Instagram and on Twitter. So yeah, that'll start in about a month, and I'll let y'all know as soon as the craziness happens. Thanks.